This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I am privileged to welcome Joelle Taylor, the director, co-author, co-producer of this film. Thank you so much. What'd you guys think? Wasn't that a ride? I love it. It's really fabulous. So to get started, I have to say, I absolutely love this film, and in curating this series, thinking about what's next and new, this really hit the spot with all of my interests in sci-fi and fantasy and blaxploitation film. And if you know me, my students know me, I teach courses on sexuality. So being really fascinated with the characters in this film, and I love, for example, the fact that you take three of the most recognizable kind of stereotypes in Black culture, particularly placing them in a moment in time where the stereotypes were mass-produced through a film industry, a Hollywood film industry that finally discovered that Black audiences pay a lot of money to go see film and are big fans of film and television as they are today. I was interested in, like, did you make this film thinking about Black audiences and what they would like?
That's working better than I thought it would. Thanks. I mean, I appreciate y'all coming out and watching it at all, for real. So thank y'all for watching it. But the Black audience I was thinking about was like, if I went home, like, what my homeboys who I grew up with, and like, you know, would they be, would they reject me when I return, you know what I mean? So that was like really, it was a very small, like, core audience of like, I was just trying to make myself laugh, you know. And me and Tony was just like, you know, because I wrote with like the whitest dude you ever met, so it's like, you know. And you'd be surprised with some of the lines that Tony wrote, funny enough.
Really? Okay, see.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
You can investigate it if you want. I'll tell. Yeah, but I think like really just like trying to make something that, like, if I went back home from Alabama, and so if I went home and like played it, and I mind you, half of them are in the movie, like, as like background.
Are they playing
actors,
roles in the movie? Some of your friends?
Them. So like when you're in the barbershop, like everybody in the really? Background of the bar, like when Isaac go in the barbershop, all the rest of them are like people I grew up with. Like,
I love it. They were all wearing their barber's aprons.
They was PAN, it was extras, like,
yeah.
I would love it. I think that was more so the audience. Like if I went home and like, would they disown me if they, you know, if they saw this or not? But other than that, I think like, I really just try to make myself laugh, you know, and hope that someone else would laugh if they saw it, or someone else would be
interested. We laughed, we cried, we felt all the things, you know. It was a lot of feelings. You took us on a ride. And I wanted to hear more about your inspiration, because in some way it's this interesting mashup of a lot of different genres coming together. The characters take us through and get us really invested, but I kind of sensed some different inspirations there. Were there certain things that like you were a fan of that you drew on for inspiration?
Yeah, no, I think it's like kind of like three buckets that I always kind of, when people ask, I kind of have to compartmentalize it a little bit. Because you have kind of like the story inspiration, which is like, it's really pretty much like They Live and The Truman Show. Kind of like the biggest story inspirations. And then there's like the tonal inspiration, so like Boogie Nights and Big Lebowski and Jackie Brown, and so I think those were probably the most things that we like kind of drew inspiration from, were the tonal inspirations. And then there were like kind of the world building inspiration, so like It Follows was a big one, and like Napoleon Dynamite, in terms of like just the ethos of the world building and having all these anachronisms and kind of trying to make the world feel like it's in its own hermetically sealed bubble, you know, where mm-hmm. you feel hopefully a little bit of dissonance in terms of like where you are, like mm-hmm. you know, definitely where you are. It's not a period piece, but like it's kind of in many ways designed to feel like one.
Right.
And kind of feel like it's hopefully kind of out of time.
I was gonna say like, it has this timeless feeling.
See, I don't like, say timeless because that's
timeless
like,
or
that's
out
like
of
a
time
qualitative
or...
analysis of something.
Yeah.
Like, it's timeless. That's like to say like
yeah, it's not that
like
kind
it's a
of
classic
timeless.
Or something.
Wait,
I mean
out
like
of
out of time.
Yeah.
Devoid of a time period. I don't like
exactly.
to say timeless.
yeah. yeah. Not as in classic and
yeah,
timeless.
Like, I wouldn't say like that.
Right.
Like, I would say like out of time, like mm-hmm. trying to make it feel like because mm-hmm. where I'm from, like a lot of like the patina of, I'm from Tuskegee, so I was like, you know, the shop, last time I went home, I was like, oh, the shopping center's new, you know what I mean? It's like mm-hmm. the, when I was a kid, there was a Domino's and a Walmart, mm-hmm. and it's gotta be like one of the first Walmarts in America that closed down.
Uh-huh.
And then the Walmart got replaced with like a slightly lesser version of Walmart. And
right,
and
right.
Like the Hobby
Tree.
Lobby.
Hobby
Lobby. And
yeah,
then
yeah,
the
yeah.
Hobby Lobby closes
close.
Down and becomes like the more bootleg version of a Hobby Lobby.
Right.
And, so like, it, and the Domino's was like, we had right. a Subway and a Domino's in the shopping center. The Domino's just became like a revolving door of like more and more like bootleg pizza places mm-hmm. that are not chains. And so
that's right.
I think.
And what about the chicken? Which chicken place
I mean,
did you
we
have?
Didn't have no like, well, KFC came when I was like in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And that ain't even there no more. The only places that's there from when mm-hmm. I was a kid is Burger King, McDonald's. Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I think there's a, you know, a lot of it's like, if you're from somewhere else and you kind of look at it and you kind of ask mm-hmm. yourself, like, you know.
Yeah. What happened here?
What
is
happened
this a place
here,
that
you know,
time forgot?
Yeah, it's a place that time forgot. But I think there's like a charm to it that like, mm-hmm. you know, if you weren't from there, you might kind of be looking at it like, you know, mm-hmm. like in a pejorative sense when you say
right.
something like that. But like,
exactly.
But I think, you know, if you're kind of in and of the place, then I think that is a little bit more, it goes a little deeper than just like, oh, people here don't about this place, because that's not
that's
it
right.
at all, you know what I'm saying?
That's
so
right.
I think we, I'm sorry, I should be cussing like this.
Oh, no, we're allowed tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I mean, like, it's very charming if you're like from there, like, mm-hmm. you know, just in terms of just the place that like kind of just takes a personality that kind of feels like insular. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you want it to feel like out of time, but you don't want it to seem like you like, are making any kind of like judgment on the place. You know what I mean? I think that was.
That's right.
So like the, you know, like in large part, like just like places where I'm from, we're also like in terms of like being inspired by, I think that also served into it. So
mm-hmm.
looking at like Detroit, It Follows, and like you had the Kindle reader that was the clamshell and you had,
mm-hmm.
but you had the CRT TVs and like the blow up pool in the back. Like it was just mm-hmm. like, so disorienting. And I think mm-hmm. like with this kind of a story, I felt like disorientation kind of was something we wanted to lean into, at least in the mm-hmm. world building, like as, you know, as best we could, you know, you kind of make do with what you got in terms mm-hmm. of the location scouting and stuff and product, you know, budget and things like that. You kind of do the best you can to make it disorienting.
There was, I mean, okay, so out of time, not timeless, but it added to this uncanny sensibility.
Yeah, we call it the Polar Express movie. That's what
yeah,
we wanted.
Yeah, because
the Polar Express eyes.
That's right. They look
that's
weird.
How we approach the
I
world
was just
building.
Watching Tron with my kid too the other day, and Tron's another example of like unsuccessful facial animation that we've gone past. Like you kiss.
We want the Glen to be like a Polar Express place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It has a weird quality, but at the same time, it's not disrespectful to the people in that community. I feel like, you know, there's the, on one side, the view of the ghetto, but when you're from that place, it's your hood, and the people are all recognizable characters in it. And I felt that a lot in this film with the major and the minor characters, that they were recognizable to us in a way that always exceeds the one-dimensional stereotype that we're given out in the culture, because a lot of us know those people and, you know, grew up with them. Somebody's uncle was a pimp back in the day, and somebody's aunt, and, you know, we all have hustler cousins. My cousin that passed away in 91 of a shooting in Brooklyn was like Fontaine, right? So we knew them and we loved them. And we knew that they were kind of real people. And I thought the fact that you give this dynamic three-dimensionality to these figures is really useful, but it also pushes against, okay, we have the trope of the pimp, the hoe, and the hustler, and they only ever get in fiction, in cinema, to do a particular kind of work, which is to, you know, reference the failure of the Black community in a way, and the downfall of our community. And instead, we have these three characters who are such fun friends. And a colleague of mine was saying they remind her of Scooby-Doo, you know, characters coming together on a mystery chase, trying to solve these problems. And they're not about conflict. And in fact, it turns out, like, Yo-Yo, the sex worker, she's super smart, right? And she has all these girlhood ambitions that we can understand get sidetracked in a way, right? She also talks about, hey, I'm trapped too, but I had dreams, and she's super smart. The pimp ends up being the most sensitive one of all, right? And that once you get past this brazen ego, there's a real soft heart. And not in a trope way, but in a way that, like, Black men are often given these kind of depth of feeling in the characters they play. And then the hustler, right? Fontaine, to me, he really defies, we see him pushing, I guess, in some ways, being dissatisfied, it starts, but really seeking something more bigger to get out of the cage and figure out what the cage is. I really appreciated how you pushed each of those characters in a new way. How were you thinking about them when you wrote about them as the three core characters to tell your story? Sorry,
you're good at this.
I laid it on you. Sorry, I put it on.
You're good at this.
It's a big question.
No, I mean, I think we always thought about the clones. Like, you know, there's like a lot. Like, we wrote like this whole like dossier when we were pitching it to actors. Like, whatever. We wrote this like dossier about how the clones were made, and then, you know, none of that like kind of etymology of where they come from is like in the movie. But, you know, I think one of the things we always tried to keep in mind was that, like, you know, in many ways, like, one of the main kind of things that we are exploring in the movie is like that, you know, the idea of like curation and like, you know, like, why do I feel embarrassed if I see a white person see me eat some chicken? You know what I'm saying? Like, why do people recoil? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not, you know what I mean? There's nothing inherent to the chicken, you know what I'm saying? It's like there's right. a feeling of being seen in a way that you don't want to be seen, you know? And one of the things when we, you know, kind of thinking about the characters, particularly the clones, was like, you know, they have this like Manchurian candidate kind of backstory, mm-hmm. you know, like, is there any drift between what's, you know, what was curated into them and what actually is, like, you know, what the people who are behind their personalities and what was, and there's like extra stuff that was cut out in the script and stuff that was a little bit more expository, but like, you know, if I put Boys in the Hood as your mm-hmm. backstory, you know, mm-hmm. like, are you necessarily going to come out being Boys in the Hood, you know what I'm saying? So I think mm-hmm. one of the things we wanted to play with, you know, was like that idea of like drift and this like ennui that all of the clones feel, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so like, none of them are like good at what they do, you know what I mean? Like a drug dealer who like feels like middle management and like don't make no money, can't keep track of the money, mm-hmm. don't feel like going to work, you know what I'm saying? It's like if you were trying to make the prototypical drug dealer, I feel like you wouldn't create them that way. Like a pimp who can't keep women in check, they like disrespect, like, there's like the idea is like, you know, that there is something like, I don't want to say a soul, but there's something like intrinsic that is being lost in translation when they're being, you know, Manchurian candidated, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And so I think when we approached the characters, you know, I think we were really trying to like, you know, have some fun with just like this, you know, disconnect between like who they were curated to be and who they actually are in like real life. And like the idea, like the longer you like go around in the world, like the further you probably slip from your initial programming, you know what I mean? And so like the first iteration of Fontaine, for example, you know, like he's kind of feels guilty about like having a kid, like, you know, but he shouldn't, like by design, he shouldn't, you know, but he does. And I think like, you know, the kind of the approach to the characters was, you know, just playing with that, you know, trying to, you know, play with that line of like, you know, how stereotypical can we make them, you know what I'm saying? And then at what places do those stereotypes kind of break down, and like,
that's right.
Where does that go as the movie, you know, kind of progresses? Like, where do these characters end up, you know what I'm saying? And how much of those stereotypes, you know, are useful, like in terms of like the mechanics of it, you know, in terms of like the sex work helps her get into the office, for example. You know what I mean? Like how many of these
she knows how qualities to manipulate men.
Because the main conceit is like, you know, three Scooby-Doo, man, three detectives who have no detective skills are forced to be detectives. Like that's all it is. And so, you know, trying to use some of those qualities that aren't seen, the more unsavory aspects of what you would expect, you know, like, oh, he could be seen as assertive, you know what I mean? Like, violent or assertive, you know what I mean? Like, and, you know, a schemer, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think that's kind of how we approached them.
I loved like, just their consciousness, you know, growing. It's like they each, I think, went on a journey, and we're rooting for them, you know, because of the ways in which they've just been, they represent these kind of captured, hopeless figures, you know. I also thought that the minor characters were very recognizable in a way. Like, I just kept nodding and be like, uh-huh, I know that one. You know, so you had Biddy and Big Moss and Isaac and also Frog. And I wanted to ask you about that Frog, because I think that he's the old man sitting in front of the liquor store, and he gives you these like puzzle pieces. And so I don't know if you guys have seen this multiple times, but every time I watch it, I'm like, what's Frog say? I gotta write this down and figure out, because he's giving us the hints. And at first you may not realize it, but he kind of reminds me of this like very, this figure of wisdom. And he's one of the only, I think, the oldest character we see in some ways, next to the church folks that are also kind of invested, let's just say very invested in their church ceremony. And now we can understand some of why. But he had this kind of perspective, and I think one thing too, he noticed when, he said, oh, you have that new car smell. He noticed when he was a fresh clone too. But I love that character, and I think that we also like discount, I think, the, not just the older, but the drunkard or whatever, but that there's somebody with a lot of wisdom that we often don't pay enough attention to in the community. It has something to share with the young folk, you know? And that struck me as something I really recognized as well. Like, when I actually gave those people attention and respect, I often walked away learning something. Did you have a figure like him that you knew, that you placed Frog intentionally in there?
Well, I mean, it's like an amalgamation of a few things, but like, I mean, the character was based on, it's like a, I was a wino in Tuskegee. Like, growing up, the wino, the local wino name was Frog, so it's like...
Okay, so he's really showing up.
His name was Frog, so it's like, and there's a, you know, it's like, it's funny because I love The Wire, but I forgot there was a character named Frog in The Wire. I was like, wait a minute, there's a Frog in The Wire. And there's a Slim Charles in The Wire, and even that was like, I was like, wait a minute. And so I almost changed the name Slick Charles. I was like, I was so close to Slim Charles. But my homie daddy named Hot Charles. And so we called him Hot Charles. So it's like, and so just these like, just completely random names. And so a lot of the names kind of came from just like people that I knew. And so in that regard, the wino was not giving like sage wisdom, you know, Frog was not giving people sage wisdom growing up, but.
Well, yeah, like, that's often.
Just asking for money, you know, but. But he was like a part of the community. Like everybody knew, like, you know, it's a pretty small town. Like, and so everybody knew Frog. And so I think just in terms of, you know, again, going back to just like familiar iconography, I guess. I mean, it felt like something that was, felt like it's something that would be naturally in a place like this, and the the history of like the character kind of evolved as we were conceptualizing the story. So, you know, Frog was the first Tyrone, you know. Frog, in the very first iteration, Frog was Tyrone. So Frog was gonna be like John Boyega in old makeup.
Yeah.
And then you realize like later in the movie that like this person who's been telling you this is Frog, and then we just decided to make it like a non sequitur at a certain point, like it just make it somebody random.
Okay.
But really it was gonna be Frog, and so he had a lot of different like purposes over the course of like working on it.
Oh wow, that's interesting to know that background.
The Tyrone that's Tyrone now is the third Tyrone, because the first Tyrone was Frog, and then the old OG Fontaine, we call him OG, but the older Fontaine was the most obvious person to be Tyrone is the old man.
Right.
And he's like, fruit's hanging too low. Let's make it something completely random. And then we thought it was funny, and then like just had to deal with the repercussions, studio repercussions of making, you know, in post that became a problem. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's in the movie, so it survived.
Yeah. I think it still ends up brilliant, but I'm really curious about the different directions it could have taken. I wanted to ask you a question about conspiracy theories, because like my friends are so tired of me talking about them. I kind of gone deep down the rabbit hole and on TikTok and other things. So in the lead up to this movie, a lot of people were talking about, like, they were doing you free advertising. They were talking about wait for this movie.
We needed
because
it. This shit came out the day that Barbie Oppenheimer came out, so we needed it.
Yes. it was a sneak hit, but also
counter
you were
program.
Impacted by the strikes and summer, maybe. I'm not sure what you felt like, you know, was all leading up to this summer, but I thought it was really interesting that there was a lot of conspiracies about Jamie Foxx because he had gone missing a couple of months.
It
nobody
feels like
saw
gone
him
missing.
Because
like,
he was gone
does.
A long time. They didn't give updates. At first the daughter was given an update, then she wasn't, then everyone was like, what happened? And then when he did show up, everyone was like, that's a clone. And they also said, when Jamie shows up, that's not really gonna be him, that's gonna be the clone. And we've already, they were talking about also, yay, Kanye West, because the new Kanye who's with the new, like, you know, lesser Kim Kardashian version, Bianca, is like taller, and then he went to get ice cream and he walked into a wall and they were like, so he's not properly programmed. So I'm just, I believe the Kanye one. I didn't necessarily believe Jamie Foxx, but then on one day in Chicago, he showed up over here and over there looking totally different, two different hairs, and they both said it was Jamie once he was shaved. Do you happen to know if that's the real Jamie Foxx?
I mean,
which one acted in it? Was it the second
I would
or
have
the third?
To imagine that that's the real Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
We shot this in 2020.
Okay.
So,
but it might have been one of his clones, though. We're just learning now that he has clones.
I mean, anything is possible, I guess, but, you know, he...
Was he aware, did he ever say anything to you that he knew about these conspiracies?
Oh, he definitely knows about the conspiracy. Oh, yeah. I mean, he for sure...
He must
for
think
sure
it's
know.
Funny.
Like, yo, man, you want to go out there? Like, you know, I mean, like, mind you, I don't...
No, because everyone thought
it's not like I talked to Jamie Foxx
idea.
Like that.
They thought he's the one, it was really his concept.
He was really
trying
like,
to do a cover for his own cloning.
I swear to God. I don't talk to Jamie like that every day. You know what I'm saying? I talked to him one time before he like emerged, you know, and kind of came back in the world. I talked to him for like 5 minutes, you know, and he was, you know, like, I was just like everybody else. I didn't know what, I had no clue what had happened, you know, what was going on. So I was just, to hear that he was okay, was like, all right, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like
it was a real health scare.
I mean, it was like,
but it was great.
The timing could not have been worse/better in the sense of like, depending how you look at it, you know
That's
what I'm
right.
saying? Like it was suspicious timing, but yeah. like it was a complete like coincidence.
That's so interesting. People thought it was really like he was behind the movie, and it was really like his way of explaining what's really happening, the dark secrets of Hollywood.
People gonna like take the screenshot and like put your face up against, you know, the last 8 times people saw you in public, and like,
they're like he looks different. His head is more narrow. And
yeah,
they're
gonna
the
try
cut.
To look for any.
The haircut's not right. Yeah, they did.
Any inconsistencies that they think that they see. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like,
it's also what the Britney Spears conspiracy theory is part of that. But actually, they're using facial AI to. Anyway, don't
what?
Get me started.
You might know more than me.
I've been down that rabbit hole, but no, I was really fascinated with that kind of the question of conspiracy. Where did you come up with, I mean, I think you were saying a bit of the Truman Show, but you didn't really realize how in the conversation cloning has been then in terms of the conspiracy community? Or?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, like okay. We wanted, you know, I wanted Gucci Mane on the soundtrack bad.
Yeah.
You know
there
what
you
I'm
go.
Saying?
Like, yeah, right, because like, he's another one.
Of course, Gucci. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted Gucci
There's
bad.
There's several rappers, and this is a discussion, like, why would rappers need clones? But that's a whole nother story. But there's a lot of conversation about this in the culture, and I think it's interesting as someone who's a lover of alien conspiracy theories and all of this stuff, that we're in this moment where I think a lot of us can imagine, but also if you think about it, Black history and culture. You said you're from Tuskegee, for instance, Joelle. If you told the story to people that the government had a secret program where they were letting people have syphilis in order to test what the outcome was on their families and their long-term health, would you believe that? You know? Would you believe that they dropped a bomb on Philadelphia and then took the children's bodies out and used them and still use them at the University of Pennsylvania in forensic laboratories? You know? Yeah. So the things that they've done to Black people, like, they sound out of this world, but COINTELPRO, would you believe that they went into our organizations and pretended to be activists in order to dismantle the Black freedom struggles of the 60s and 70s? It sounds outrageous, but it's true.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't discount them all the way, because, you know, there's sometimes a little truth.
Mathematically, some must be true. Like, you know, there are thousands of conspiracies. Like, they can't, they're not all, you know. I believe in aliens from a mathematical standpoint. Like, it's, you know, they must be. You
there
know,
must be.
That
Do you think that
probability.
They're possibly here right now?
Anything is possible, you know. Anything is possible. I don't know, you know. All right.
That's a yes.
We
Next
probably,
question.
I mean, we so desensitized, you know, we should have been like, it's too many bombshells.
No,
now the bombshells
exactly.
are just losing potency, so it's like
that's right. No, there was
they might have showed us an alien and you know, like, all right.
You're
yeah,
like,
okay.
I got right, sure. I still gotta go to work tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's
like,
what people
right.
were saying about the congressional hearings this summer, where there was a whistleblower talking about government programs to retrieve alien ships, and he talked about the biologics they found and all this, and everyone was like, and do I still have to pay my bills and go to work? You know, like, not that. It didn't hit the way that they thought.
Call me when it's Mars attacks.
Exactly. When it's a war or something, let us know. I wanted to ask also, I love the sound in the film, and it's so great to hear it on a big screen. But the music was awesome, and I'd love to get the soundtrack. But both as
it's
the soundtrack...
Far.
Okay, good.
Little shameless plug.
I'm still thinking in terms of I need to buy the CD. Sorry, I'm dating myself. But thinking about funk and your interest in funk, and funk is like a certain kind of feeling that goes along with the color and the tone that you set in this film. I wonder if you could talk about that, but also this question of using music as almost like a weapon against us. We found that the music can make us depressed, tired, aggressive, docile, maybe even horny. I mean, that it instigates through hypnosis in this film. This is something that people have been talking about a long time, but how the feeling of the music was really important to actually Black culture and life and the ways in which we embody like joy and pain, and that the music is usually our soundtrack, and that something happened around the 90s with hip-hop where it really shifted to something that was less about consciousness, and it had a certain sound to it that was almost repetitive and also kind of leaving us feeling less liberated in a way, or feeling less free. I'm curious what you think about those ideas about how music can be used against us, and also your choice, your choices around that kind of funk sound, and also how cool about Erykah Badu.
Yeah.
The way the film ended was brilliant with that track. So
yeah, I mean that's the only thing that turned out the way I saw it in my head. You know?
Really?
Well, nothing ever comes how you see it in your head, but that did, strangely.
Huh.
Yeah, we had that. As soon as the script, They Clone Tyrone was like the joke title. It was called Reagan Era.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And I would just say They Clone Tyrone, joking, and people were like, you know that's the title. And so like so many people that said it, it was like, all right, this is the title. And then the very next thing, I was like, okay, so clearly Erykah Badu has to like,
yes.
Remake.
It's perfect.
And for some reason, she wanted to do it. But going back to
What were you thinking?
Question like about
the songs that you chose, "Love Hangover," other.
Shout out to our AE for that one. I picked most of the songs. I didn't pick that one. And our assistant editor, I was auditioning songs, and Rob was like, "What about Love Hangover?" I was like, oh, but I think we wrote it. We kind of write everything like to music. So we try to,
like when you're script writing, you have it on the background.
Yeah, and just ideating and writing. We'll make playlists for different projects, and we just to kind of put us in the tone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it depends on some things are easier than others to find. But this one was like kind of, from the beginning, we made a playlist, and it was like Mary Jane Girls and Patrice Rushen, and a lot of stuff that ended up in the movie is stuff that was on our playlist when we were writing it. But don't get me wrong, it was like other stuff, we had like other genres, but like probably 75% of the playlist was, like R&B from 70s and 80s, and like funk, and like Bootsie Collins, and and so, we knew we wanted to be funky, but like, it was like a funky mystery. Like, what is that? You know what I mean? Like,
funky like mystery, yeah.
Question mark profit. You know what I mean? Like, we would figure out, somehow we'll figure out this funky fake Scooby-Doo movie. and so I think it was kind of like ingrained in like the personality of the movie. Like, it's kind of spiritual, like part of the movie.
Yeah, that 1976 Dumbarton Green Pontiac Grand Prix.
The Grand Prix, yeah. Like,
very nice car. It went, it kind of went with the driving and just the mood of it, in the space.
Yeah, I think like, the music for me, just kind of reorients me to the feeling that like we going for, And so I think like a lot of it ended up in the movie just naturally, and I think one of my best friends growing up making music with the composer's like my friend from back home.
Oh wow!
I grew up like making music with him when we was in like high school, and he ended up composing it.
Oh wow!
And
that's cool.
We wanted to hopefully try to make the score kind of a lot of organic instrumentation, bass and drum heavy, and try to see how much bleed over we can get with in terms of just like how much of that funk makes sense in these different kind of scene context. And
it felt like you used the funk but also like made it more current, and it, so it had like a little bit of a current feel, and it really kind of set this mood. It's almost a nostalgia to the film that adds for that timeless, not timeless, but out of time.
Well, I mean, it's that patina of that blaxploitation, yeah. Patina. I mean, we wanted to kind of lean in some of the same mm-hmm. instrumentation, mm-hmm. you know, and try to play with it and mm-hmm. see how we could blend it with, like, you know, think like Rat-a-Tat and like.
That's right.
More like kind of synth wave stuff from like think John Carpenter, you know.
Right.
So like, you know, you're trying to like hybridize like, you know, mm-hmm. Carpenter-esque kind of synthetic, you know, almost kind of 80s inspired instrumentation with this, mm-hmm. you know, more like mm-hmm. blaxploitation, like right. Willie Hutch style of, you know, of music, and like, I don't know what kind of like bastard child can they have at certain points. And it took, you know, it was like just trial and error, just seeing, you know, and then you run out of time at a certain point, so, you know, you know, and you hope that when you get the film scan back that it, like, makes sense, you know, because you may compose most of this looking at, like, the digital version before we did the film scan back, and so you're just like, hopefully this works, and...
Did but, you feel like it came together?
Yeah, I mean, I think so for the most part. I mean, like, again, it's like, you know... You can only like look at it and see like what you wish you could have done. So it was kind of hard to, you know what I mean? Like it's hard to be like, oh yeah, that we thought, because you know we run out of time on certain things, mm-hmm. and like, you know, there's always some behind the scenes going on. You know?
I can imagine.
You know, you kind of end up against the wire, and you know, like there's like. You make changes and you don't have time to go reorchestrate it. So then we had like orchestration for like most of it, but then like when I did the scan back, I was like, oh, some of these cues aren't working the way I thought they would mm-hmm. once I saw it with the film. Mm-hmm. And like the stock we chose is like pretty crunchy because I wanted it to have, not be grindhousey, but you know, have some texture to it. And once you kind of see it with the texture, and that's the last thing that happens. So you know, that happens mm-hmm. like after you've mixed it. And so once you see it with the scan back, you're like, oh damn, that's cute. Some of the more like synth wavy kind of things that were in the score, mm-hmm. I didn't feel like matching. So it's mm-hmm. probably like now it's like 80% Willie Hutch and like 20% John Carpenter-ish.
It's very
but
cool.
It was more like 50-50 at one point, and then we had a little bit of time to go back and like, that's a different story in of itself, but we were able to kind of like redo mm-hmm. some score, but we didn't get to, they wasn't going to pay for us to get, bring the orchestra back to do the funk. So, you know, it's like, it's some of it's digital, some is mm-hmm. orchestration. You know?
What about this part about, I thought when, you know, we go in the deep underground military bases, otherwise known as DUMS, hashtag in case you're interested in my.
We call it the honeycomb hideout.
Honeycomb hideout, right?
That's what
it is. Really cool.
We call it the honeycomb hideout.
Okay, there's the part where the brothers are fighting and it's like a certain kind of music and then it shifts.
The song
to,
that, yeah, the
I
song.
I need a hug. And then they start hugging.
Yeah, that's the song he gets killed to in the beginning.
Okay. Is it?
Yeah, that's what he dies to in the beginning.
And then when we shift to LA, I noticed that the lyrics were like, you are enslaved, but it's sung so sweetly that you don't know. I only knew when I put on the closed caption that they were singing, you're enslaved. when we see the real Tyrone. So,
yeah, what about it?
No, I'm just curious. What about it? I'm just curious about how you like the way that the music has this hidden messages and the potential to hypnotize and do harm or to bring people together.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think we, you know, one of the most kind of, I guess, executable slices. Like it's kind of hard to mm-hmm. visualize like subliminal messages and. Your TV, but it's a little easier to kind of, mm-hmm. you know, we wanted to hit, like, you know, it's in your food, it's in your water, it's in your TV, it's in your, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, we wanted to try to, like, make it kind of everywhere. All-encompassing. That's how they right. were, you know, influencing people. That. And I think, you know, we leaned to the music in large part because I think it's a little more obvious to dramatize, you know? Yeah. And so we, you know, that we kind of, you know, just, we thought about, like, a lot of things that could happen, but I think, you know, we that was one aspect that we thought we could have some fun with in terms of Easter mm-hmm. eggs and, like, you know, absolutely. There's songs that, like, you know, there's songs that, like, we couldn't figure out a way to get in there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That would have, like, we wanted things to, like, control. Certain things that if you were to watch it, like, two or three times, you would see people being affected by music, but it was harder to kind of get it from beginning to all the way through, like, post, you know, with, like, surviving in the movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I mean, like, a little, every once in a while, like, we were able to slide some extracurricular songs, like, when they yawn and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, but yeah, I think it really, we that was one of our main, you know, kind of plant payoff devices that we wanted right. to kind of come back to, you know, in terms of him dying in the beginning to the killer song. Mm-hmm. And then the men fighting to the song later, right. and then, you know, wow. having the, you know, just the device in general come back in the club with the, you know, play in case of emergency song, mm-hmm. Which was supposed, again, it's like when you ask about, you know, how do I feel about it, you know, it's like, we pitched it, it's like, we're going to go get Drake to do a song, you know what I mean? Like,
and we ended up with Grant.
And then he went and made, like, Twisted Slide, and it was, like, basically the same concept, like, that we, you know, and then the shooting day gets pushed up on the schedule, so, you know, you're like, we don't got a song yet. And so it's like, you end up, like, having to, like, mm-hmm. make do and figure things out, you know? So, like, the scripted version of the song is a lot more instructive, you know?
Interesting.
So it's like, it was telling you, like, you know, hands in the air, two hands in the air, you know, spin in a circle, and then it slowly started to get more.
Oh my God, that's like, making me rethink like, the electric slide and the Cupid shuffle. It's like,
but we wanted it to be Drake.
But those like instructions. No, but like
this is, telling you to
it's
do
one
it.
Of those things that you had, like everything that we love kind of was used against us in a way, and so it makes it, it's like a blind spot for us to see how it's being used, but you know, the things that we kind of relied on are kind of, we're actually the kind of hinge of manipulation. And so it cements this kind of feeling like you can't trust, yeah, like you know? The things that are familiar you can't trust.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's, yeah. as many ways as we could hopefully like take what was comfortable and familiar and yeah. Polar Express it. That's we tried, you know, you we did. Tried to do you as did. Much as we could.
I think they're going to be referring to they cloned Tyrone'd it instead of Polar Expressed it from now on.
Maybe. I don't know. Hopefully.
So I want to tell you that I think that whatever you write, we'll watch. And don't let the toothpaste machine steal your creativity. Because we love your thoughts and your mind will go with on the journey with you. And also we have so many students who are ambitious to be screenwriters and some faculty too, so maybe you can come back to UCSB sometime and help us with a workshop or something.
This was great, you know.
Thank you so much to us.
Thank you so much,
everybody. Huge round of applause. Wonderful. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.